2010, and the name of this workshop is Coming Off Medications, a Harm Reduction Approach.
Yay.
So welcome. And I invited Dan Fisher, who's the director of the National Empowerment Center, to say a couple words before we get started. So welcome, Dan Fisher.
I just wanted to say, first of all, that with both Bob Whitaker's talk and with Will's, there is a balancing act involved, which you must be aware. We live in a climate where these issues are very, very dogmatic, and they shouldn't be. And I think the positive that's come from the controversy around both this workshop and about Bob Whitaker's talk is that it brings the conversation forward, and that's what we need to do, because it's really not black and white, even though certain parties at this time would like to say it's black and white. So I'm just thrilled that Will's giving this workshop, and you have this harm reduction guide. It's very, you know, nuanced and responsibly done, because it is not, and it's not intended to be medical advice, just as Bob had said, but information that people need to have about if you do choose to taper or come off medication, you have information about how to do it. So thank you.
Great. And also, Dan, I want to thank you publicly for all your work and for inviting me to this talk. Thank you. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Well, welcome everybody, and this workshop, as Dan mentioned, is based on the harm reduction guide coming off psychiatric drugs, and we're going to be discussing exactly what a harm reduction approach means and talking about that today. Also, I want to apologize that I don't have amplification with all the chaos with the lights, and the storm apparently is responsible for a power outage in the whole district right around here, just the whole area, the whole neighborhood, not just the hotel. So we're sort of making do with the best that we can with the change of rooms and the lighting and everything. There is a lot of information about my work, including a lot of resources around medications as well as trauma issues, and also ways to contact me at willhall.net. If you have questions, I'm also available for speaking, doing work and trainings. In the future, please feel free to contact me. Just go to willhall.net. And I am going to be presenting for about half, I guess we have an hour and a half, I'm going to be presenting for about half an hour, 45 minutes, and then I want to really give all of us a chance to have a good discussion, to ask questions. To be clear, this is not about medical advice. I'm not a doctor. I don't give medical advice. This is an educational workshop so that we're all better informed, that we can help ourselves, help each other, help others in the process of exploring medications, how they're useful to us, how they might not be useful to us, how we might want to explore coming off or reducing medications. So very important to welcome everyone here. This is not an anti-medication approach. I myself am not anti-medication at all. I'm pro-good science, good medical research. You just heard a wonderful speech by Robert Whitaker, a historic speech by Robert Whitaker here at the Alternatives Conference. He's the author of Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. And let's be clear, the scientific literature, the medical research, if we're honest about it, does support that many people do well on medications. Many people do well long-term on medications. And for that reason, I'm not anti-medication. I know many people who are doing well on medications, who feel helped by their medications, who are supported by their medications. And so this is really about what works for people, because the reality is, as we know from the scientific literature, as the research is also, we know from talking with each other and our own personal experiences, that the medications don't work well for everyone. A lot of people aren't helped by medications, and a lot of people are made worse by medications. So coming to terms with that is what this this workshop is about. And the guide that you all are free to take, the harm reduction guide to coming off psychiatric drugs, is available free as a download on the internet. And you're free to take that and put it on your websites, to print it out, to distribute it. You can use it to raise money for your organizations, completely open, Creative Commons, open source, free copyright. You have permission in advance to go ahead and print it and distribute it and make it use. Y también quiero decirles que hay este guía en español para hispanohablantes. Entonces, si hay hispanohablantes en tu agencia, tu grupo, tu comunidad, que se necesite esta información, se puede bajarlo a la vez también con el otro en inglés en el sitio de web en español para imprimirlos. Y we also have an edition in German. So I was just saying there's a Spanish edition and also a German edition. We're working on a Danish edition. Right now I have someone working on a Japanese edition. Please feel free to distribute it and use it. I'm going to try and really give you a condensed version, but everything that I'm going to be presenting here is in the guide. And this guide, really the harm reduction guide to coming off psychiatric drugs, it exists to fill a gap. It exists to fill a gap. When I was one of the co-founders of the peer-run organization, the Freedom Center, in 2001, we had many, many people coming to us saying, these medications aren't working for me. How do I get off of them? Or, I tried to get off and I couldn't. Can you tell me what's going on? Or, is it possible to get off? My doctor says, I can't get off. I'm not allowed to get off. There's just so much misinformation. And so, if you look in the thank yous for the guide, this is a small sample of the number of people who were involved. There were about 40 different collaborators. It was an incredible collaborative group and collaborative effort of people who have been on medications, people who have been in the mental health system, doctors, psychiatrists, nurses from several countries were involved, holistic practitioners, acupuncturists. If you turn to the back, there's a list of health professional advisors, including Daniel Fisher, who's one of the editorial advisors. Alexander Bingham is here, is one of the editorial advisors, and there's a whole list of folks who were involved with this. This was really a collaborative effort. I was really the person who synthesized all this information because we had been doing this work for years, and there wasn't easily readily available information. We felt like we had to put this guide together. It was filling a gap because, as you know, there's a lot of talk about going on medications and staying on medications, but there isn't a lot of information about coming off. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. One is because of the way in which there's a tremendous scientific and medical professional consensus that medications are the answer. There's also the pressure from pharmaceutical company marketing. So there's a gap of information. And that's really all we're trying to do here is to fill this gap. And I also encourage you to give this guide to your providers, to your doctor, to your prescriber, to people at your agency, your nurse practitioner, people in your family, to educate them about what these issues are all about. So if I was to have a single message that I'd like to give to SAMHSA and the federal government and the folks who set mental health policy, it would be clearly we need research on coming off medications. We need good, solid research. It has not been done. It has not been done. This is based on personal experience. It's based on some research that's out there. Especially some research from the UK, the organization MIND, that I'm going to be talking about a little bit more later. We need more research on how drugs interact with each other. We need more research on the protocols. We need good research on the ways in which medications work on the brain and how the coming off process works. And so I would like to see on a federal level some leadership around this because it's a desperate need and it's not being met. And so I think it's really, really important that we also become advocates and activists and ask for this information, ask for that support, so that when you're in the hospital and when you ask your doctor, they say, oh yes, I know the information about this. Okay, that's your choice. Let me support you. Let's talk about this. Rather than, oh no, that can't be done. Oh no, that's not possible. Oh no, you must be on medication, which is a message that we often get. Because I feel, and I think it's pretty clear that it is more dangerous to not talk about this openly. It is more risky to not talk about this openly because people are frustrated with their medications and they don't have support, they don't have information, and they end up just trying it on their own without researching and without getting support, without learning. And that can be really risky. So in a free society, good medical policy, good healthcare requires the free flow of information. And so that's one of the reasons that this guide exists. And the approach that I take, it's very important. I mentioned protocols, and it's very important to understand that this is not a how-to guide. You can't come off medications like you're making a cake. It just doesn't work that way. And the reason is that we're dealing with the human mind, and we're dealing with society. And one of the things that we know from our lives is that everyone is different. So many of us have this label. I was diagnosed with schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, schizophrenia. How I experience that is going to be very different than how other people experience it. Sure, there are going to be commonalities. There's shared experiences. There's things that, there are patterns, there are things that fit that I can say, hey, I have this in common with you. You have this in common with me. But everybody is different. And so this is not a recipe book. This is an educational guide that will help you to discover what works best for you and the people you're supporting to discover what works best for them by exploring. And it's one of the reasons that we have an image of a labyrinth on the beautiful cover of this guide, because everybody know what a labyrinth is. A labyrinth is a maze that you walk through. It's a way of getting from where you are lost to freedom. And you don't know which way you are going to end up going. You have to explore. You have to try one way. You turn and try another way. Oh, that didn't work. You have to go back. You have to go forward. You have to really explore. And the pedagogical approach is a popular education approach based on people's experience. If you want to read more about popular education and learning and empowerment, this is a great book. How many people have ever heard of Pedagogy of the Oppressed? A few have it going up. Isn't it a great book? It's really a great book to check out. So in that spirit, this is the first edition of the guide. And as you read it, you may say, hey, you know, Will, you forgot to put this in there. Or, you know, this isn't quite right. Or, you know, this was written 2 years ago, and there's some new stuff that came out. Send that to me, because we're working on a second edition. And I would love your input. You have such incredible experience in this room, from medications, from being in the peer movement, the recovery movement. There's so much experience here and knowledge. Send me suggestions on what the second edition should include. It's going to be a little bit more expanded, a little bit updated. And you know, we have a thank you. We'll put you down as a thank you for contributing to the guide. And we really appreciate that help. Because, like I said, it really comes out of the recovery movement. It's really a collaborative effort. So, quickly, Robert Whitaker's speech you just heard. The standard of care around medications right now is, this is a disease, you need medications, that's the answer. And that is not based on good science and not based on good medicine. The science says that some people are helped by medications, some people are not. The standard of care for using medications, if someone is in a crisis, someone is in a wild state. I mean, when I was holed up in my apartment, not leaving, hearing voices, terrified of other people, thinking about suicide, wandering the streets all night, I was in a crisis and I needed help. And so the standard of care, what we should be doing for people is, when they come into a hospital, they come into an encounter with helpers, we should start by just creating some safety around them and providing them with social support. And then see how it goes. See if they can ride it out. See if they can make it through their crisis with some emotional support, some peer support. It's incredibly helpful. And then, if they're still having difficulty, the next step would be to address sleep issues. Because that's one of the most important things that leads to crisis. A lot of people are nodding their heads. Is lack of sleep. And I tell you, large numbers of people, when they go into a crisis, all they need is help to get to sleep. And
that's,
they will,
right,
make it through. So let's start the medication around helping people with sleep. I would encourage not starting with medication, maybe starting with some herbs or some acupuncture. If the person doesn't respond, then go to medication like benzodiazepines. And I know lots of people have questions. Let me just...
No, it's not a question.
Look,
why don't you first start with asking,
what
they,
yes,
need.
Exactly.
And then going on.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, yeah. Social support, peer support, and respecting people is absolutely right. And so I'm going to try and keep as much time as I can for comments and discussions. Everyone has great things to add, and I want to also make space for that. So helping people sleep will help people come through a crisis. And then if the sleep is not helping, if the medication or support for helping people sleep, then you start to say, okay, what else can we do here? I would say start with holistics, and then think about maybe small doses of medication. If that is helpful to people, then think about when there are people feeling better and stable and they can move out of the hospital, they're back into the community. You don't give them a framework which says long-term medication, medication for life. You give them a framework that says, okay, that got you through a crisis. Now let's think about reducing, helping you going off medication. And based on this experimental approach, this standard of care would result in a lot more people not being on medication at all, a lot of people being on medication very short term, and then you're going to have some people who are going to be on long-term medication because that's going to be best for them. But I would love to see a lot of other things, peer support, social supports, holistic health added to that mix. That's the standard of care that we'd like to, that follows what the research says and what the medical science actually shows about how medications can be effective. So, as you can see, that's a not an anti-medication approach. That's not an either-or approach. In terms of thinking about this discussion, not in either-or terms, but in what works best for you terms, we came up with the idea of calling it a harm reduction approach. And people may know harm reduction. Basically, the message of harm reduction is that, look, we're going to meet you where you're at. We're going to meet you where you're at. We're not going to program to say this person should be totally off of medications. This person should definitely be on medications, either or, black and white. We're not going to program things. Harm reduction approach in alcohol and addiction says some people getting totally off, being totally abstinent, that's going to work best for them. Some people, that's not going to be the best approach for them. The first thing that they need is not to come off of drugs or alcohol. They may need housing first. So it's a harm reduction approach. You may need to support someone to be able to continue to be doing what they're doing because that's what works best for them. It's a meet people where they're at approach. Harm reduction around sex education says, look, some people are going to have sex, so let's provide condoms to them, let's provide education. Let's not just say you shouldn't have any sex at all, but realize that everybody is going to be different around that. So it's a flexible approach. So we said, look, let's take this approach to psychiatric drugs. And when we're taking a harm reduction approach, we need to look at all the different kinds of harm that are involved here. It's a mistake to think that the only risks that are involved are from medication. That should be really clear. Medications are not the only harm that we're talking about here. We're talking about the harm that can come from the crisis that someone is in, the disruption of their family, of their schooling, of their work, the difficulties that they could get into with the police, the housing, all the different things that when we are in a state of that gets called psychosis, that gets called madness, all the different potential harm that could come from that. There's also the harm that potentially can come from treatments, from going into the hospitals, potentially harmful, it can potentially be traumatizing. Force is frequently used in hospital settings, which can be very harmful to people. Diagnostic labels, some people identify with their label, I'm bipolar, I'm schizophrenic, that's useful for them, but for other people it can be very, very harmful to get that message that I am a label. And then there's also the potential harm that comes from medications. And so what we're trying to do is to look at all the different harms that someone is facing and help somebody to make a good, informed choice. And to do that, we need to be honest about all the different kinds of harm that are involved. We don't want to overstate the harm that can come from being in a crisis, and we don't want to overstate the harm that can come from being on medication. We don't want to understate those either because there are very serious dangers involved with all these things. We want to be honest about all the different harms. And, of course, it's not a mathematical equation. All we can do is dialogue, think, educate ourselves. The piece of the puzzle that we haven't talked about enough in our society is the harm that can come from medications. And as Robert Whitaker talked about, and he talks about in his book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, that harm can be very serious. And the harm increases significantly when we're talking about long-term use of medications. So when we're comparing all these things, we need to be realistic about the many, many dangers that go along with especially long-term use of medications. And also, we need to also be careful to not exaggerate the potential harms that can come from crisis itself. Usually when someone is acting weird, they're in a different space, they're not communicating, they're very depressed or anxious, or they've got wild energy, we tend to just label that and then say, oh, that's bad, we need to get rid of it. Voices, hearing voices is a really good example. Well, you don't necessarily need to just do everything you can to get rid of voices. There are ways of working with that experience. There are ways of living with that experience. Sometimes it's extremely negative and scary. Sometimes it can also be positive or helpful. Some people like the experience of being a voice hearer. It can be tied into creativity and spirituality. But let's not demonize and be too scared of what gets called psychosis as we're looking at all the different risks here. Another part of that is also looking at the risk of suicide. Often just mentioning, oh, I had a suicidal thought, will get a huge reaction and can get you locked up because the risk of that is so exaggerated. The doctors, professionals will think that that's all we should talk about. We need to focus on that. We need to put you in a locked room because that's this incredibly scary, risky thing. Well, it is risky and it is scary, but let's not exaggerate that because many of us have suicidal thoughts and we don't act on them. In fact, it's actually much more common for people to have suicidal feelings. If you start to talk with your friends, people who've never been in the mental health system, they may say, yeah, you know, there was this time in my life and I was feeling suicidal. And so we need to not exaggerate the risks that come with that. The situation that we have in our country today around drugs is that we've created not just for psychiatric drugs, but for all drugs. We've created this very odd situation, which is that we have our angel drugs and we have our devil drugs. We are very black and white and either or when it comes to drugs. So we have, if you turn on TV, you'll get the angel drugs. Oh, you've got the anxiety. And you know, it's like, and it always shows someone who's like black and white and is like really not feeling very good. That's the before. They're sort of walking along and the thunder clouds. And then the next scene is Technicolor and they're running with the frisbee and the dog. And I'm not exaggerating. That's what these advertisements are like. So those are the angel drugs. And then we've got the just say no to the devil drugs. Oh no, we have to never use marijuana because it'll lead to insanity and all these different messages that we get. So our society in general is very, very disturbed and is not very rational around this discussion about drugs in general. So let's be honest about our discussion of drugs and medication. Let's not polarize this. Let's not get into either or thinking. Let's recognize that there are people who've used recreational drugs and they seem to, you know, do okay. Let's not exaggerate that. There are people who are on psychiatric drugs and they do great. Let's not exaggerate the dangers there. Let's have a much more honest discussion about drugs. And let's also just talk about how drugs work and how they don't work. And I'm going to be getting into that in a moment. One of the first things we want to do when we're approaching coming off psychiatric drugs is to educate ourselves. And it's very difficult because our culture is so polarized. There's so much missing information. There's a lot of resources that are listed in the guide that I encourage you to check out. Talk with people in your life. Try and cultivate multiple sources of information. Your providers, your prescribers may have good information. They may not. Often they don't have good information. Often the information is missing. And educate yourself. That's one of the first steps that we want to do, educate each other. There's no end to the educational process. So we're always making calculated decisions. We're also making the best decisions that we can. When we talk about risk, no one is free of risk. We just had a power outage here. We're in Southern California. There could be an earthquake here. A lot of us. Wait a second. Well, I mean, if we focus on the dangers, we could say, how do we get rid of all risk? Well, I got news for you. There's no way to live without some risk. So when we talk about risk reduction and harm reduction and looking at risk, we're not talking about coming to zero risk. We're talking about balancing different risk. So Robert Whitaker's book is excellent for providing missing information. And there's a lot of different sources that are on the internet that are listed in the guide that I would encourage you to check out. A few of the key messages that you need to know in the coming off medication process that you may not have heard before. And these are, this is information that's just not available, it's not believed, it's not, but it is accurate information. It's really important. One of the big messages is that people do recover. People do recover. That's a message that we all, not everyone, but many people. I haven't taken medications in 17 years. That's my experience. I was diagnosed with schizophrenia. I have many friends who take medication. They're doing great. Many friends who are taking medication and having a hard time or thinking about coming off or struggling with coming off. That's the message we need to be clear about. Some people do well. Some people don't do well. Some people get off medications and they do better. People can recover without medications. Some people are going to be in a process and really realize that, hey, actually I do better with my medication. Let's be honest about that too. So that's one of the important messages that we need to be clear on when we're discussing coming off psychiatric drugs. I mentioned before the way in which we create the devil drugs and the evil drugs, and we need to recognize that, folks, drugs are drugs. Drugs are drugs. That actually the way in which recreational drugs, there are the legal recreational drugs like alcohol, well, we're in California, so it's not entirely illegal. Drugs like marijuana, there's the social drugs like caffeine, sugar, kind of sort of like a drug in some ways. We tend to think of them as like there are these drugs over here and these drugs over here. We call these drugs drugs, and these drugs we call them medications. Right? Yes. Well, actually, they're all psychoactive chemicals. You take them, they enter into the body, they make very strong changes in brain chemistry. And let's not be afraid of changes in brain chemistry because your brain chemistry is changing all the time. You eat a meal, your brain chemistry changes, right? You take a psychoactive substance, whether you call it a recreational drug or a medication, it makes very strong changes in your brain, and then you experience consciousness changes, effects. This makes me feel good, this makes me not feel good. I feel sleepy, I feel energized, I feel better, I feel worse, based on how your consciousness interprets those changes that take place in your brain and your body. Now, that's true of smoking marijuana, drinking alcohol, snorting a line of cocaine, or taking Abilify, or taking Ritalin, or taking Prozac. They're all psychoactive chemicals here. And what that should help us to understand is that sometimes psychoactive chemicals can be really helpful for us. I mean, there are folks who are taking psychiatric medications. It's helpful for them.
We're doing it with iPhones,
but we don't, I think, have the... Great, is it working now? Okay, great. Can everybody hear me? Can you all hear me okay?
Better with it.
Yeah, it's better with this. Okay, great. Thank you so much for coming and helping us out here. So psychoactive chemicals make changes in the brain, and those changes can be helpful or not, okay? So how many people have ever been on a deadline and drunk a cup of coffee and said, wow, thank you so much, psychoactive chemical, you got me through my deadline. Okay? So how many, and let's take it a step further, how many people, I know this is a recovery conference, but a lot of us do drink alcohol. How many people kind of use alcohol to unwind, to relax, to kind of keep your head together? Okay, let's be honest about that. There are even some studies that say it could be beneficial to drink a glass of wine, that kind of thing. So that's using a psychoactive chemical as a wellness tool, as a coping mechanism. Chocolate, yeah. People are really into the chocolate. So, exactly, chocolate is very popular. So the idea here is that it's a drug. It has psychoactive properties. But I want to say that you may find chocolate helpful to you, but for me, one of the ways that I live without medications is I'm really, really careful about my diet, about nutrition, and I'm not exaggerating. If I eat chocolate, I can go into a psychotic state. Wow. I'm not exaggerating. And in fact, if you look on the internet, if you Google caffeine psychosis, caffeine sensitivity psychosis, you will find that many people have extreme reactions to caffeine. I'm one of those people. So, again, if we're talking about the benefits that some people have for certain kinds of medications, the benefits that some people have for certain kinds of psychoactive chemicals...
May I have your attention, please?
Power has been restored in the Scarborough area. Thank you for your patience and understanding.
Thank you. The voice of heaven. Yeah. So, okay. So you see where I'm going with this, is that let's not prejudge how people are going to respond. Just because you love your chocolate, don't assume that, you know, encouraging me to join you is a good thing. Because it's not, folks. And I have now, does that mean that those of you who find chocolate helpful have some kind of disorder, or people who are, I have friends, I don't smoke marijuana. In fact, I can't be in a room with people who have, there's smoke. And in fact, I have a hard time even hearing people talk about it, to be honest with you, because I'm so sensitive. But that's me. Some people, there are people who use medical cannabis, medical marijuana, to help them with some psychiatric conditions. That's becoming more and more popular and recognized. That's them. I have friends who have been diagnosed with bipolar, and marijuana calms them down and helps them. Now, does that mean that they have cannabis deficiency disorder? No, because we know that's not how cannabis works. It's a psychoactive, it makes changes, and the changes are experienced as positive for the person. This is true of Abilify, Seroquel, Prozac, Xanax, lithium, whatever psychiatric medication you want to talk about. Psychoactive changes in the brain experienced as helpful or not helpful by the individual. It's really that simple. And so when we talk about recreational drugs, we talk about psychiatric drugs, we're really talking about psychoactive drugs and how they help people. As Robert Whitaker mentioned, what they're not doing is correcting chemical imbalances that the illness is part of. There has been a lot of belief in that and a lot of research about that, and has just not produced any proof that that's the case. It is not responding to a genetic disorder that someone has, like sickle cell anemia or Down syndrome or something. It's very specific. You can look at the gene under a microscope. That's not how it's working. If a medication is helpful to someone, it's because it has psychoactive effects that are experienced as helpful. It's not correcting chemical imbalances. In fact, because it's psychoactive, it's creating an imbalance in the brain. It's very important for us to understand that, because when people live under that assumption that, oh, I have a chemical imbalance, I need my medications. Hey, my medications feel like they're helping me. Oh, that proves that I have a chemical imbalance. You get locked into thinking, and you don't even consider that coming off medications is a possibility, because it seems like it defies what you know about the illness that you have. And of course, people get very defensive about this, because, and I get defensive too, because that's the message that they told me. Hey, you gave me this message that's actually not true, so what's up with that? So we need to be more honest about how medications work, and we need to be more honest about why they're experienced as helpful and why they're experienced as harmful, because when you make those changes in the brain, which are often very serious changes, you create problems with side effects in the whole body that can be very, very severe. Someone who takes a lot of alcohol is going to create all kinds of problems in their body. Someone who takes a lot of Abilify, or takes a lot of Zyprexa, or a lot of Prozac, may, not necessarily, but may also create very serious problems. And there is a list of some of the things that can happen, up to including death. I mean, some of these drugs, you have to get a blood draw because of the toxicity level, and if the toxicity is too high, you can get into a life-threatening situation. I mean, I had a roommate once who was taking Lamictal and got one of those rashes, and her doctor didn't know about the rash. And fortunately, someone Googled Lamictal rash, and it was like exclamation points, get to the emergency room immediately. And so there are tremendous risks that are associated with these side effects that need to be understood and looked at. And we don't really understand that carefully enough. And one of the things that we also don't understand about the coming off process is because drugs are making these changes in your brain, you will have, if you go off the drugs, you will have withdrawal effects. And they're often called discontinuation syndrome, which is a synonym for withdrawal. But basically, it's the same as withdrawing from caffeine and getting a headache, withdrawing from sugar and getting, you know, withdrawing from alcohol and getting an alcohol reaction to your, what can become a dependency. And it's not an addiction in the sense of you build up tolerance. It's not exactly the same as that. But it does mean that your brain and your body have adjusted to being on the medications. Okay? So one of the messages that we need to get across really loud and clear is that when people, you hear it said, so-and-so is off their meds, and they went into a crisis.
Yeah.
And then, because that's true. That's true. People go off meds and they get into a crisis. This has happened. And the message that we get, though, is that, oh, it's the underlying illness that's coming back. So it must be that they need their meds, right? But actually, if you go off caffeine and you get a headache, that doesn't mean you have the underlying illness of caffeine deficiency disorder and you need to go back on your caffeine. It just means that your body, your brain, has become accustomed to having that psychoactive chemical. And when you withdraw it abruptly, you're going to get those big withdrawal effects. So the confusing thing is that the withdrawal effects for psychiatric medications look like what? They look like psychosis. They look like the illness. So now you see how we've got a setup for a very confusing situation. And in fact, one of the messages that you will take home today from this workshop is that generally speaking, going very slow is very important in coming off medications for the simple reason that it gives your brain and body time to adjust. And it depends on the medication, it depends on the person. But generally speaking, slowly tapering is the approach, the protocol, and seeing how it goes. But I've seen people who go really slow and have really big reactions to a very small dosage. So I don't want to make any kind of blanket statement. And I've also, there are situations, and this is unusual, but I'm going to mention it, when people are able to just go off abruptly. And everybody knows the story of somebody who miraculously quit cigarettes cold turkey. And it is possible, and there are actually situations where it may be medically necessary, because if you're in a life-threatening situation, my friend had that Lamictal rash and had to come off Lamictal. They didn't taper my friend off Lamictal. They yanked her off Lamictal. So there are situations when abrupt withdrawal, cold turkey, does work. I haven't seen it very much, but I don't want to rule it out, because you will run into people that happens with. The general rule of thumb, everybody's experience is different. So the general rule of thumb is to go slowly and to taper, and it gives your brain the opportunity to slowly adjust. Now, the other thing that I think is important to understand in this equation of harm reduction is that often doctors will say, professionals will say, well, God, yeah, you gained all this weight, you know, you're really having a really hard time, you've got all these kidney problems, you've got, you know, and it's terrible. Yes, 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 you've got all these side effects, but isn't it so much better than mental illness? Isn't it so much better than psychosis? Isn't it so much better than what got you into the crisis in the first place? Okay? So, this is a really important thing to address. First of all, you are not the same person now that you were when you went into that crisis the first time, because everything is a learning process in life. So now you have a different experience, you're in a different place, so you may not be in the same place that you were when you went into that crisis. That's the one thing. The second thing is that as soon as someone says, I was with because I am now a therapist and I work with people, and I was in a hospital with a client who was struggling and was in the admissions process because she wanted to go into the hospital, and they asked her, you know, are you suicidal? Are you drunk? Are you hearing voices? Very common. The experience of hearing voices is so scary and overwhelming that we exaggerate it as a risk. So when a doctor says, well, you know, the side effects are so much better than the other thing that you could be going through, the psychosis and the crisis, hearing voices, well, the reality is that for many people, hearing voices is a terrifying experience. And yes, anything is going to be better than that. But let's not exaggerate that, because many people also learn ways of coping with and working with and living with their voices. Many people find ways of living with, coping with their suicidal side that they have, the experience of suicidality that they have. Many people find ways of coping with and living with their tendencies to depression that are not medication. So this either you're going to be in a crisis in your worst psychotic state, or just take the medications and live with the side effects.
That's a false equation. That is a false either or. There are many ways of working on addressing crisis without medication. That's an important part that we need to look at. And people here are familiar with the Wellness Recovery and Action Plans, the WRAP program, very important tool. There are so many different tools that we can use, and one tool that we can use, and I encourage all of us to learn about, is this issue of sleep. And I mentioned sleep before. You can learn to regulate your sleep without medications. I mean, you can learn to notice what your early warning signs are. If I get to sleep after 10:30, 11, the next day I start to feel like I'm sliding down. If I go a night without sleep, I start to really get into trouble. And so I learn what my early warning signs are. And this is a long-term process. This is about exploring. This is about studying myself, getting support. So that's an important message. There are many, many ways that we can address our wellness and address the tendency that we might have to go into crisis, the possibility that we face of going into crisis that don't necessarily mean that we have to be on medication. Now, the other thing I want to mention here, and this is kind of a wild card, is the importance of the placebo effect. Because, you know, I mentioned that, you know, if you take a psychoactive drug, it changes your brain chemistry, and then you have body changes, and then your consciousness interprets that and says, here's how I feel. I like that, I don't like that. I feel better, I don't feel better. Now that jump between what's happening in the body and the brain, and then what we experience, what we think and feel, what our consciousness says, that's called the mind-body conundrum. That's the mind-body split. You can study biology, you can study chemistry, but they've never found where thinking is. They've never found where feeling is. They've never found where consciousness is. In fact, there's no established definition of consciousness. We can all agree that we're all awake and thinking and alive in this room, but science has no definition of it because there's been a huge debate and a mystery of how the mind arises from the body. There's no answer to that mystery. So that's why there's something called the placebo effect, which means that everybody is going to be really different in their experience of medication based on their expectations, based on deep held beliefs, maybe even unconscious beliefs about what the medication is going to do for them. It's very widely known and commonly understood in medicine that when a drug comes out and it's new, it works better just because it's new. Okay? When the congressional hearings happened and the black box warnings came out on antidepressants, and the word started to get out like, hey folks, this can sometimes make people suicidal, all across the world, the effectiveness of those antidepressants went down a bit, just because of the power of expectation and the power of mind. And I cannot underestimate how powerful the placebo effect. I mean, there is something called placebo surgery. There are people who have had knee problems their whole lives, and nothing responds to the knee problem. And so they put them under anesthesia for a surgery, but all they do is make a surgical cut under the skin, and they don't touch the knee at all. Sew the person up, come out of the anesthesia, and then now they don't have a knee problem. How is that possible? There are experiences where they will mix up the lab results, and a patient who does not have cancer will get a lab result to say, hey, you have cancer. And guess what happens? The patient starts having symptoms of cancer and starts to slowly die from the cancer just from being told the incorrect lab results. And then they tell them, oh, we made a mistake. Let me give you the correct lab results. So the patient starts to get better once the power of the mind kicks in and they realize, whoa, wait a second, I don't actually... This is well documented in scientific literature. Now, think of what happens when you go to a hospital and a very powerful medical professional says, you need to take these medications for the rest of your life. That's how it is. Very powerful placebo effect. Now, we would live in a different world if the doctor said, well, medications help some people. They don't help some people, and they got a lot of risks for a lot of people. Let's see if you want to try them and see what happens. It's a very different message, isn't it? Very different message. So need to understand the power of the placebo effect. And that's not to say that the message should be, you can get off medications, because that's just not, it's just not accurate. Some people are going to do better on medications. But the message should be, you might be able to. It's worth exploring. Find out for yourself what works for you. That's a much more empowering message. It's a much more recovery-oriented message. I see your hand. We'll get to questions in the... Okay. Wow. Interesting. Interesting. She's saying that there's research now about how they can block the placebo effect with the chemicals. It's all this research. I mean, I feel personally that the placebo effect is something positive that we should cultivate. I mean, I do acupuncture and I do vitamins. People say, well, you know, Will, the study just came out saying this, this, and this, and it doesn't actually work. It's like, I don't want to read that study. No. It works for me and there's no side effects. You know, like, so as long as it has no side effects, let's believe prayer can be very powerful, and you put prayer under a microscope, it doesn't really, what's there to study, really, but the reality is that when people pray, the studies show that actually it can be very helpful for some people. So the power of belief. So let's talk about approaching, talk about the educational process, talk about some of the messages that you need to counteract and get clear on. Let's talk about approaching the medication coming off process itself. First of all, I am a very strong believer in support. You should get as much support as possible. And I work with clients. I say, well, what does your husband say about this process? What does your family say? What do your friends say? What does your doctor say? Let's bring in some more people. Have you considered? Well, you're interested in holistic health. That sounds good. Well, maybe you should bring that person in and get them as a consultant working with you. Get a collaborative team going. You want to get as much support as possible. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that some people are not going to be supportive, including your prescriber. So, and this is where I have disagreements with different people in the field. There is a study that was done. There's a charity in the United Kingdom, England. This is the leading mental health charity in England, in the UK. It's called Mind. I mean, this is the leading organization on mental illness. And they've done studies. And they did a study on coming off psychiatric drugs because, you know, this guide that I wrote, it's not the first time that this guide has been written. There's a great guide that's in Canada. There's a great guide in England. And they, you know, maybe it's because they have less influence by the pharmaceutical industry. They're able to be more open about these discussions. But the guide that came out by Mind and the research that they did, They asked consumers, they asked people who were taking medications about the process and who came off and how it went and what worked for you. And they asked them about support and about working with your prescriber. And they found that many, many people did not get support from their doctor. And that's really common. Your doctor says, no, 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 I'm scared. Standard of care, which like I said, we're trying to get changed. Standard of care says, I have to medicate you. They're afraid of malpractice. If I don't medicate you, someone's going to say I'm not practicing good medicine, because that's the standard of care. You're scared, you know, so sometimes, I'm not anti-psychiatry, I'm not anti-doctor, there's a lot of good ones out there. Sometimes they're just against it. Sometimes you need to be educated. You need to educate. You may know more than your doctor. Educate your doctor, educate your prescriber. Sometimes they're not going to support you. Get a new doctor, get a new prescriber, get a new support system. The MIND study found that this was so common that many people were finding other supports to go off and not getting their doctor support, and they found out that people were just as likely to succeed without their doctor support in this study. So as a result, MIND changed its policy. They used to say, look, if you want to come off meds, get your doctor's approval first. But as a result of the study that they did, they said, well, actually, it depends, so we're going to change our policy. We no longer say, only do it with your doctor's approval. And that's why, to be honest to the science, to honest to the experience, I can't say that. Now, ideally, what you want is you want as much support as you can, because that doctor is an informational source. They're a resource. They have lots of information that you may not have about side effects, about what's happening to you. The doctor is the gateway to your prescriptions. The doctor is the gateway to your tests, lab tests, getting your draws for your blood levels, for your lithium, taking a look at your liver, enzyme counts, taking a look at your blood glucose, all the different things you need to look at in terms of looking at side effects. You need those medical professionals. They're vital. But just because a doctor says no doesn't mean that should be the end of the process. Often, doctors, I've seen that if you are firm and you make a commitment and you make a case, you go to your doctor and say, well, look, you know, I appreciate your advice, but I have this in place, and I have that in place, and I have the support of this, and I've done this research. The doctor may say, wow, you know, you're the most empowered client I've ever had, most empowered patient. You actually look like you're doing something reasonably responsible, so I'll go along, I'll still be your doctor. I'll support you. You don't have to fire me as a doctor. Start that dialogue. Start that collaboration. Try and get that collaborative process going. And one of the things that I do with people that I work with is help them to be in more of a collaborative relationship with their prescribers, because ideally you want a lot of support. There are people who have done it alone. Sometimes you're alone in the world. You know the meds are causing terrible side effects. No one is helping you. You may have to just do it on your own. But really, as we know, this is a peer support movement. As much support that you can get around you is going to be really important. And that's before you even start thinking about reducing your medications. You want to get that support into place. You want to do that educational process. You want to help educate your supporters, address their fears. Well, I'm find out what their fears are. I'm afraid for you. I saw you when you were in the hospital. I was worried about you. I'm worried that that's going to happen again. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about my experience. A lot of times the people who are frightened for you have really good information. They may remember, hey, do you remember what you did? Do you remember how you were? Do you remember what was going on? Wow, yeah, thank you for helping me to really take a harder look. So you want the opinion of the folks around you, even if they disagree with you, because like I said, you want multiple sources of information so that you can make a really good decision. So once you have educated yourself, once you've gotten support in place as best you can, now what you want to do is work on your wellness approaches. What are you going to do if you start to get anxious? What are you going to do if you start to get start to feel really bad, start to feel like you might be suicidal? What are you going to do if you can't get any sleep? Let's talk about all these things because they're very common. The three most common medication withdrawal side effects that people experience are sleeplessness, anxiety, and flu-like symptoms. So, and then a return of what gets called psychosis. So speediness and lack of sleep, flu-like symptoms, anxiety are very, very common. Also depression can be really common. What are you going to do? And if someone doesn't have anything in place, if all they've been doing is relying on the medications to address those kinds of symptoms, then when you reduce the medications, they're going to suddenly be scrambling to learn some tools. So learn the tools first. Learn the tools first. I mean, everyone can feel better. I mean, you can always get a better night's sleep. You can always feel better. Anxiety is something we all deal with. Low times, difficulty sleeping. Work on that before you start the reduction process. Get those into place. And then you also, like I said, you want to look at all the different risks and harm that are involved. A lot of times people are angry, they're frustrated. Of course you're angry and frustrated. And it's a tendency, we want to scapegoat. We want to say, oh, my medications are the whole source of the problem. Oh, my doctor is the whole source of the problem. Well, sometimes that may be true. Maybe your medications is really the big thing. But often it's easy to blame one thing. And helping people understand what's going to help you in your life first. What's the real risk here? What's the real harm here? What's the real thing you want to work on first? It may be housing. It may be your relationship. The client that I mentioned, I said, how is things with your husband? You know, she said, well, actually, my husband's really scared. He doesn't really support me talking about this. They need help with their relationship. So now I'm not even working on reducing medications. I'm helping the person to talk to her husband and get more support from her husband. So people have all kinds of needs that you don't discover until you talk about them and understand what they're going through. Again, consulting with the person and finding out about what's going on for them and trying to really understand best how to work with them and how to make the right decisions. So knowing also that you, as you start a reduction process, you may want to go back on medications. You may start a reduction and say, wow, you know, that didn't work for me. I need to go back on. Wow, you know, I really don't want to take medications to go to sleep, but I haven't slept in a day, in 2 days. I need to get to sleep. So not having that anti-medication attitude, being flexible and looking at all the different kinds of harm that are in play here. And then, generally speaking, like I said, one of the things that's recommended is to start with like a very small reduction of one medication, like 10%. Again, this isn't medical advice. I would talk with people, with prescribers, but this is often what people find is a good start. 10% and then see how it goes. And that might be a huge psychological obstacle. Huge fears come up. Just on 10%, again, because of the placebo effect. And then deal with that. See if you can work with that in non-medication ways. See how it goes. And hey, if you can reduce 10% and you're doing well, that's great. Maybe that's all you need to do. Maybe that's it. You feel better. Wow, I feel better. It's only 10% reduction. That's great. So just stay with that. You know, whatever the person decides is going to be right for them. And if they feel like they're doing well with that reduction, then go to another reduction. Then keep going slowly down. Often people find that if you're on multiple medications, coming off of one is a lot easier than coming off of the last one. And that there are some medications that can be especially difficult to come off of. People report that Paxil is very difficult to come off of. The benzodiazepines, Xanax, Ativan, and Clonopin, and these are very more addictive than heroin, folks. More addictive than heroin. And so there are people who are on, who come down to very, very tiny, tiny, tiny doses at the very end, and they just can't go off of it. So be gentle, be patient, be supportive, understand these are very powerful drugs, and it's a very difficult process. It can be. Some people don't get into the assumption that it's going to be a difficult process. Maybe it'll go easier for you. Maybe, you know, it's an exploration. Be prepared, but also be open. Be open to what is actually happening. And then we get to, I mentioned this a little bit before, the part of the puzzle that I think is really exciting and interesting, which is, well, okay, you know, I'm not taking medications, I'm hearing voices, I'm feeling suicidal, I'm like, well, so much energy. I'm talking to UFOs. I think that the end of the world is here. I've got all this stuff going on. I'm feeling paranoid. Now what do I do if I'm not turning to medication? Well, the good news is that there is a lot of stuff that we can do. There are so many different techniques. There are a lot of people in this room who have so many different approaches. And we could have an incredible discussion about different ways of dealing with these issues. I did a whole workshop yesterday on trauma and spirituality. There's a whole literature on dealing with trauma. Working through psychological methods of dealing with trauma. There's a whole spiritual approaches. Normalizing your experience. Like, yes, I get paranoid sometimes. Yes, I hear voices that, hey, I'm just part of, that's just part of what it is to be human. I'm different than you, but humans are diverse. I love the phrase mental diversity. Now, let's not get everybody into a box. Let's recognize that people can be different. And maybe somewhere in that experience that we've called illness, that we've tried to get rid of, is it possible that there might be some gifts in there as well? Some gifts in there as well? I mean, being paranoid, I mean, I experience what gets called paranoia. I mean, I get really, I don't want to be around people, you know? But what I've learned, that my paranoia, which I feel came from living in a traumatic family, my father's a Korean War veteran, very chaotic. I didn't know what was going to happen. I had to always be on the watch out for what was going to happen. The slightest little signal, is my dad going to be angry? I think that's where my paranoia came from. But my paranoia also means that I'm very observant, and I'm very sensitive, and I'm very open. Now, those are really wonderful qualities that I've been able to turn into a gift and a positive thing for what my life is about, which is about helping people and educating people. So be open to the idea that, hey, maybe what gets called psychosis and illness is a part of us. It's a deep part of who we are. And it may be really difficult and scary, but there may be something in there that's helping guide us into thinking about who we are in a different way and maybe embracing some of the positive sides of that. And that can take years, folks. I mean, I'm not here as someone who's off medications and been off medications for 17 years to tell you that it was easy. It took me many, 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 many years of, first of all, I had to unlearn a lot of the messages that I got in the hospital. And I had to try trial and error. And that's one of the reasons that I do the work that I do now, is that I want to make it easier for the next people. I want to make it easier for everyone else to not have to go through the being totally in the dark. And that you have some resources, you have some guides, you have some leads, you have some knowledge, some information that can help inform you in this process. Now, let's see what we're doing for time. So 11 o'clock, so we have about 25 minutes or so, and I'd be very delighted to take questions and comments. And again, get in touch with me through willhall.net. And if you have anything that you're reading the guide, you didn't talk about this, this is missing, here's some new information, this is a study you should check out, there's a new guide that got published in New Zealand or something, do you know about it? Please, we got the second edition of this thing coming out, and I would love your input because I'm adding new things to it and creating an even better guide. So I'd love to take questions, and I don't know where to start. Let me just start right here. Yeah. What is Amplified?
I recently went to the Stanford Polar seminar. It was filled with performance foundation stuff. And they were surprised to find out the new drugs, but they're studying the new drugs that are coming out. These placebos are doing better. And they want to know why they can't figure it out. And when I tried to approach the situation and ask that, is it really important to have drugs and not these other things, I was kind of dismissed. And I would love to see you go there. Talk
to them
and change it. Stanford and Harvard are such leaders in this, and we need, they change,
and
other doctors
change. Well, thank you. I would love to go there and talk to them. I would need a posse of people that support me. I don't want to go there alone. Please, yeah, just have to be in the conversation. Yeah, because this issue of the placebo effect. There was actually a study that was done recently of the number of doctors who prescribe placebos. I think it's something like 40% will just say, hey, you know, I don't know if this will work, but try it, it might help for you. And then, so doctors in their practices understand the placebo effect is very powerful. I think it's a positive thing. So, yeah, you had your hand up.
Yeah.
Let me give you the mic.
Depending on your answer to this, maybe we can talk online a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I talk to a lot of psychiatrists and a lot of people who are direct providers. And so I want to be able to speak their language. And I'm wondering if you have any outcome data that I can present to them with your guide. And the three things you said that people find most difficult, the sleep anxiety and the flu-like symptoms. And is there any outcomes data you have on
helping
people do that with
alternatives? Like I said before, there's not a lot of research on the coming off process. There is some. And there are leads, citations in the harm reduction guide. Take a look at the research that MIND has done, the UK charity MIND. And, you know, like, if you're going to get into a discussion with a psychiatrist or medical professional, Robert Whitaker's book should be like on your hip, to pull out and get, because he's got incredible research about that. So, but unfortunately there hasn't been enough of it. And what we need is much more studies about the coming off process. I know that a lot of people find different supplements helpful. I mean, people have heard about fish oil. There's starting to be more studies really showing that, hey, this is really great. That's one of the things that you want to talk about before you get into the withdrawal process itself. Get those wellness practices in place. Get those supplements. Get those dietary changes. Looking at food allergies, I mentioned my allergy to caffeine. You know, try and get these things into place before you start the process. So next question. Let me go with someone in the way back. I feel like a talk show host.
I think what was so far, I feel that I should mention that many of the symptoms also cause flu-like symptoms. We call a cleansing
That is such an important reason. Thank you so much. Don't go. Such an important comment about getting home. You're in a detoxification process. You're literally reducing the amount of toxins in your system. And so that's what flu symptoms are. Your body is saying, "I need to get the germs, the pathogens out of my body." So thank you for doing that.
And then, like, using the drugs, do you have any experience with other than using the book, have you found ways that work to help the systems understand what you teach?
Wow, that's a great question. First of all, I started out my talk today. I'm not anti-medication, and I make that really clear, and I recognize that people are helped by medication, and the scientific literature also supports that people are helped by medication, some people. So being really, really speaking the language that they speak is really, really helpful to getting into system discussions. That's why Robert Whittaker's book is having such an impact. He speaks the language of evidence-based medicine. There is a wonderful book, an ancient book called The Art of War by Sun Tzu. So, we get into conflicts here, right? So Sun Tzu says when your opponent is most dangerous is when they are backed into a corner and have nowhere else to go. Okay? So whenever you approach the system, you present to them, here's what you can do to move forward. Here's what you can do. Here's how we can work together. Here's how you can join our side. That's why we're so excited about starting medication protocols for coming off, getting the doctors involved with this, and so they can say, yeah, I'm a doctor, you need me, let me help you with that process. And really recognizing that the best kind of movement is the movement that invites people to join it. And I think also it's really helpful to, because I use role plays a lot, and so if I am working with someone who's very strongly frightened or against coming off medications, who has a very strong belief system or has been doing things a certain way, I will role play what it's like to be them. I'll try and step into their shoes and think about all the different obstacles that they're up against. And that makes me more compassionate. It's like, hey, I understand why you're giving out medications like you do all the time, because that's how you were taught. That's the standard of care. You're afraid of the family members suing you. And then being able to really empathize with the other side, and let me help you with your, because you're in a jam too. I don't want to back you into a corner. You're in a jam too. Let me help you figure out how to make this work for all of us. Because we all really, as human beings, all we really want, I think, is to love each other. And that's kind of maybe the most radical thing I've ever said, but that's really what I believe. So if you can appeal to that, then I think you're in good shape. So I'll keep trying to move around the room to get as many people from as many spots as possible. Yes.
Okay.
And also, let's try and let people who have not spoken already speak first, and then we'll.
My own experience, I went off my medications against medical advice. I told my doctor finally that that's what I was doing, and he said, well, there's no way that I can go along with this, so he wrote against medical advice in my record. And so my concern is that, and I mean, I'm fine now. I'm so, you know, it's such a good thing that I went off my medications. It's been 3 years, I'm a new person. One question, I mean, a concern that I have is that depending on your history, like, he would have thought that, oh, I'm one of those people that absolutely needs an antipsychotic for the rest of my life. There's just no question. And I had to just go against him on that. And then, I mean, there was more stuff that happened. I had to still go against him. So I finally found a psychiatrist who I could say, well, you know, I could, he would be my psychiatrist and not be afraid to to not prescribe the meds
right.
for me, but he's outside the system.
Yeah.
I had to get medical insurance. I had to get a job, get off this building, get a job, get medical insurance that would allow me to go outside the public mental health system to find that.
I mean, that's a really good point. You illustrate the importance of being flexible and counter opposition to look for other providers who may need to do that. They may be out there. And it's complicated. I mean, when we talk about risks, having that little note in your file that says against medical advice, that's kind of a risk that you face. So you got to balance that. Losing your benefits? Oh, hey, I don't take meds anymore. Oh, okay, well, then we're not going to give you your disability payment anymore. I mean, there are, sometimes people have to be quiet about what they're doing, and it's very complicated. So really, that's one of the reasons I really recommend going slow and looking at all the different factors that are involved here. So thank you. Yeah.
My name is Glenn, and I had a very good psychiatrist. His name was Dr. Khalil, and I was on lots of medication. And I really didn't like taking all the medication I was taking. I was taking a lot of pills, and I learned over the years that I didn't have to take all that medication. And what I learned over the years was that I could be on what they call a maintenance dosage. And a maintenance dosage is where you stabilize on medication that works for you. And it's a maintenance dosage is where you just take like one or two pills a day, and that's all you have to take. But just maintenance means that you take enough where it keeps you normal, or keeps you stabilized on medication. And that's all I want to say.
Thank you. I really respect that this is your experience and what you've been through. It's great that you're interested in learning more about this process. And so many people are on multiple medications. And just going down to a smaller number of medications, that in itself may be a really valuable goal. And it's important for us to recognize that we have choice, we have responsibility, and we can do what we want to do. And also, it's the important responsibility of your doctor to be monitoring you and say, hey, how is this happening with this side effect and that side effect? Really encourage you to look at your options and really think about it as an ongoing process. So thank you for sharing that. So let me go here.
Yeah, my concern is medications I'm on, I don't take very many more if I'm stabilized, but a long-term effect.
Yes.
One of them weak blood sugar.
Yeah.
And I have terrible family history with that too. So,
yeah.
So even though I do well on my medications, I really like
Exactly. Well, when we talk about doing well on medications, facing long-term risks is not really doing well on medications.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's important, like if you're feeling like your mood is good and you're basically able to function, that's a part of the puzzle. But there's also this long-term issue that also needs to be addressed. So let me go here. Yeah.
No, I just know about being on a lot of medication. I'm a consumer also. At one time, I was on 14 medications.
Oh, God.
And
that's not practice. I just think that's not practice.
And my daughter came home and found me collapsed after 48 hours.
Oh, my God.
And I was rushed to the hospital. And the doctors at the hospital couldn't believe I was on 14 medications.
Wow.
And I've only been on four since then, since I left the hospital. I've been on the same four.
Thank you so much. I mean, one of the things I mentioned in the book is that this is such a serious situation with over-medication that sometimes lawsuits are needed. And there have been many settlements with lawsuits. So, I mean, that's a terrible story. I'm glad that you made it through that and you're here with us.
How is it going to approach the insurance companies to where, when we decide that this is what we need to do and we may need to be hospitalized to do it, how are we going to get the buy-in from not only insurance but from our doctors?
This is a really great question. One of the things that is being worked on with the medication optimization approach and creating a standard of care is recognizing that when someone
is going through a coming off process. Maybe they end up with a crisis, they go into the hospital, to not immediately medicate them back up, but to continue the process of coming off. And that's a new thing. It's going to depend on changing the standards there, getting new policies in. Really, how to address insurance companies, how to address the bigger healthcare system, is at the bottom line. What we're talking about here today is about creating a prevention-based healthcare system and a wellness-based healthcare system that is ultimately going to cost the whole society less money. Because as Robert Whitaker's book discusses, the long-term risk of medication is, of course, chronic disability, which is very expensive. And when you are on medications long-term, you often are more susceptible to crisis. You may be using emergency services more often. You may be getting those disability payments and those hospitalization charges ongoing over years and years and years. So we need to make the case that not only is this good science, good medical science, not only is it what consumers want, it also makes a lot of sense economically. It can save the society a lot of money in the long term economically. So we have a few more minutes. Was there another question?
On your new version of your book, is there a date that you would like us to submit our suggestions or insights to you?
You're asking me for a deadline.
Well, one of the reasons that this is now 2 years old and there's not a second edition is that I haven't had a deadline for putting the second edition, but I'm thinking in the next couple of months. So, yeah. And then also, you know, whatever information you can send me is always going to be useful because it goes into my learning that I can share with other people. So, yeah, a couple of months, that'd be great. Thank you.
Howie the Harp, who was one of the founders, did a white light video. I don't know if you know about coming off medication. So I think there's something about him on YouTube. I don't think that's the thing that you should be able to get that videotape for yourself. And I think we need more than just booklets. I think we need lots of different media for putting this word out. And the question I have is, in the Freedom Center and other places, has there been any training or group process for people who are wanting to support each other in their coming off process?
Yeah, that's absolutely. I mean, the Freedom Center had a coming off medication group. When people want it, we have the group, and we've had it off and on for many years. And also the support groups the Freedom Center runs, often people are talking about coming off medications and supporting each other. Again, the groups are always open to people taking medications, not taking medications. But there are, there's also groups that I run in Portland. Portland Hearing Voices has a support group, and one of the things that we talk about is medications. And it's really excellent that it's often when the different support groups that we have at clubhouses and agencies and organizations, it's kind of a taboo topic. So this is just a form of recovery, just one path of recovery. We'll need to all be incorporating this into our discussions and have that. And I think your point about getting more videos is great. I mean, people should also know that I am a radio host. I host a show called Madness Radio. And there's a lot of people who talked about coming off medications. And I've had Robert Whitaker as a guest. You can go to madnessradio.net and listen to all kinds of different talks that I've given. There's a talk that I gave on coming off medications in Holland, which you can listen to if you go to the blog page. And so that's also another thing. But I'd love to do more videos and get into multiple media. So thank you. Dan, yeah.
As far as what
I see you're eating chocolate. We've got a whole discussion about chocolate.
An alternative.
It's one of the lucky ones who's not allergic.
Well, it's an alternative medication. we have this white light video that we transferred over to CD and by Howie the Harp. We have an interesting history. It actually resulted in Paul Engel's project, White Light Being Defunded. That video. So there's a history of this. But I think we've made a shift now, because with Pam Hyde really publicly declaring that if he was right, to take or not take medication, that's a terrific opening. And we're trying to do is to open the dialogue now, so there's conversation about it instead of, you take it or you don't. And like Will or friends myself say, maybe people don't need it for a lifetime. We're not anti-medication or anti-psychiatrists. We're pro-choice. And that's what I think we're really going to do.
Exactly. Pro-good medical science. So, yeah.
Thank you, Dan.
Dan's been great work. It's over here.
Deborah Waterhouse wrote a great book, Why Women Need Chocolate. It came out about 1997. Fear bromide, magnesium, and a lot of federal things that I can't remember how things. But I wanted to, I just had a little bit on cortisol. Have you ever had any? Because I have experience where I stayed up all night long and cleaned my house, and I'm not a good housekeeper. I have been given a prescription of cough medicine with codeine, and I had an opposite reaction, and I understood it was the hormone cortisol that was giving me all this energy. But I also found that bread calmed me down, and turkey dinners, real turkey. Oh, and in hospitals, they give Benadryl that you can buy over counter to sleep. I thought they were giving all these psychiatric drugs to make this work, but it's Benadryl.
It's really good to share that information about what wellness is, including nutrition. You make a really important point about what gets called psychosis, because sometimes people have a psychotic crisis, end up in the hospital because they're having a reaction to a medication that they're taking.
Yeah.
And a big one is steroids. Steroids, if you just look up steroids and psychosis, that mania, psychotic reaction is not uncommon. Steroids. And a number of people I've talked to, their first hospitalization was because they had mania from a result of taking prednisone or some steroid. They get into the hospital, the doctors don't see it as a medication reaction. Now they say, oh, you've got bipolar. And this is how Robert Whitaker talks about this quite a bit in his book. And ironically, the other thing that often happens is that people can have a psychotic reaction to a psychiatric drug. And so now you're taking an antidepressant, you have a manic episode, which happened to me, and then now you get a diagnosis, it's even worse. Now you're bipolar or schizophrenia, and they give you even more medication. So it's a very complicated issue that we need to look at all the different things that go into leading someone to have a crisis. So,
thank you. I'm going to keep going with people who haven't spoken before. So, you did, so. Everybody. I think we're about out of time. So yeah, thank you very much for coming. Great. Please take copies of the guide. There's a whole boxes. Please take a minute to share. And thank you so much for coming.
So did the whole thing get taped?
Yes, the whole thing is taped. Yes.
All right.